We'll start the show in just a minute, but first, a word from our premier brand sponsor, Casago.
Casago's founder, Steve Schwab, has been quoted as saying, "You can only be a local in one place." This simple yet profound statement is the basis of Casago's franchise model, which allows locally owned vacation rental management companies the ability to compete at a national level by leveraging the systems, software, and support, the buying power of a much larger organization.
As a Casago franchisee, you have the freedom to run your business with the support of a community of like-minded professionals while leveraging the economies of scale and buying power to increase profitability and reduce operating costs.
Visit casago.com/franchise for more information.
Welcome to Alex and Annie, the real women of vacation rentals. With more than 35 years combined industry experience, Alex Huesner and Annie Holcomb have teamed up to connect the dots between inspiration and opportunity, seeking to find the one story, idea, strategy, or decision that led to their guests' big aha moment. Join them as they highlight the real stories behind the people and brands that have built vacation rentals into the $100 billion industry it is today. And now, it's time to get real and have some fun with your hosts, Alex and Annie.
Welcome to Alex and Annie, the real women of vacation rentals. I'm Alex.
And I'm Annie.
And we are joined today with Hunter and Ginger Harrelson of Beach Ball Properties, the owners and also the current 2022 reigning champions of the VRMA Property Manager of the Year. Hunter and Ginger, welcome to the show.
Happy to be here.
So are you guys in the same building or is there a reason? I mean, you're not together. Usually people get together to record. You had to be in separate offices.
So we're in separate offices. If you can imagine, Jenner's office is right across the hall from me. Believe it or not, when we renovated this office, actually, they put special insulation between our walls because I'm such a loud talker on speakerphone to give Ginger a little bit of sanity. So, yeah, we're between two offices. We thought about getting together, but we both have our old flair. I mean, I like to have the awards and the trinkets, and Ginger's got her pretty boutique-y look. So it gives everybody our vibe.
Okay, but that doesn't mean you don't play well with others, though, right?
No, absolutely not. Okay. We play very well with each other.
And I had the honor of getting to see your office a few weeks ago when I was in Gulf Shores in Orange Beach for a market visit. And I will say one thing that I absolutely loved about your office was that not only do you two have separate themes, but pretty much everybody in your office has their own very unique way of decorating. And I thought that was a really kind of cool way of showing everyone's style and let everybody have a little bit of personality.
Yeah, we wanted our employees to be able to, you know, have a touch of themselves in their office. So when we did the renovations, we said, y'all pick out, you know, whatever you want. If you want an accent wall or if you want to put a certain light fixture in, as long as it's within reason, you know, we got it. So it was a fun project.
I love that.
Very cool.
So why don't you guys give us a little bit of background about how you met and then how Beach Ball Properties came to be? And I believe I always said the PG version is what we're supposed to hear here.
So there are many people out there in the world or in the vacation world, actually in the world, but in the vacation world specifically that have heard the how did Ginger and I meet. So in college, I had purchased a Jägermeister machine. So any of the listeners remember the three upside down Jaeger machine, the cold tap machine.
Oh yeah.
it was a nice conversation starter. So one night I was out with some friends and met Ginger through those friends and they told her about this Jaeger machine and was trying to convince her to come over to my house and have a Jaeger party. Now, as a wise woman she is, she decided I'm going to bring all the girls with me. This is going to be a safe space. We're going to have all the team here and, you know, go from there. So the next day she's planning up this party. She's trying to wrangle up the girls to come. And she gets a text message from another girl in the sorority. This text message said, "Hey, I heard there's a Jaeger party." And Ginger's like, "Oh, yeah, absolutely. Do you want to come?" And the girl was like, "Yes, the guy's named Hunter." And she said, "Yeah, do you know him?" And she said, "Yeah, you know, I kind of got a thing for him. We're kind of dating. And I'd really appreciate it if you'd stay away from him." So Ginger called me out on it. You know, asked me. I tried to explain that I did not have these same feelings for this individual that they felt. But Ginger, out of respect for a sorority sister, decided to back off the party. Now, y'all, at that moment in time, I deleted Ginger's number. If you are watching this on the I guess YouTube or wherever y'all post this YouTube, or if you've ever met Ginger, you can see she is absolutely gorgeous and way out of my league. And I felt that I had probably just stepped off in a landmine. So a couple of weeks go by. We're at another graduation party from a girl from my hometown. And I'm in there and I see Ginger again and the other girl that kind of has the hots for me. And there's kind of this kind of cut the tension, you know, in the room. And like, I step out.
This is the president of the sorority. It's not just like any girl. So
somebody you didn't want to rub the wrong way.
Oh my goodness.
Wow.
And okay. Ginger was the social chair, so they sat on exec together. So yes, there was a little more meat on the bone than just a couple of girls in the sorority fighting over a hunk like me. But so I walked out of my vehicle. You know, good college parties, you gotta hide your adult beverages out in the core. Everybody will steal them out of your cooler. So then walking back, Ginger approaches me and says, "Hey, I haven't heard from you in a while." I said, "Well, you know, I haven't heard from you either." And she gives me this line about how the phone works both ways. And y'all, this is the line of the century. This is the cell of the century. And I didn't even realize I was doing it. But I said, "Well, you know what, sweetheart? I deleted your number a couple of weeks ago." And she goes, "Well, now this is what, Ginger, this is 2009. So if y'all remember, the iPhone was only a couple years old at the time. So
yeah.
You know, you formatted your iPhone, it would just nuke numbers and your phone book would disappear. So it was a logical thing to say back then."
Yeah.
So Ginger says, "Well, I reformatted my iPhone the other day and updated it, little saw my numbers too." And I shrugged my shoulders, said, "Oh, well," and walked off. Y'all, I didn't think I was ever going to hear from her again. I thought it was just her just trying to mess with me, just, you know, playing girl games. Well, sure enough, a couple days later, I got a text message from a random number. It happened to be Ginger. And she said, "This will be the last chance you ever get this number." And I said, "We know, let's forget the Jaeger. Let's forget everything. Let's start fresh. Let's go on a real date." And I took her out to the nicest restaurant in Mobile, and we've been together ever since.
Wow.
And we still have that Jaeger machine. Now, so we recently got our head of maintenance. This is actually pretty funny. We recently got our head of maintenance to like repair it and fix it up. And we were talking about, we have a pool and an outside bar. And I was like, we need to put it up there. I do not think I could ever drink Jaeger again, but I could put Fireball in or some other fixer. But like Jaeger used to be the thing. Like it used to be like Fireball is now. And Hunter would go to Sam's and buy like cases of sugar-free Red Bull, and like Jaeger bombs were
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
Even after we got together, we were like, I was still in college. So we were still kind of doing the Thursday night going out before the bar. So we would go to Hunter's house and have Jaeger parties before we would get, you know, a ride downtown during the bar. So anyway.
Somebody recently corrected me on that, but I said the same thing. I was like, you know, people used to drink Jaeger all the time. They said, "Alex, people still drink it. You just don't."
Right. That's exactly anymore. True.
It's still around. It's still a big thing, but yeah. I remember those days.
Yeah. Jaeger's the one thing. Everybody has that one that's like, you thought you were going to die. You know, like that's one right there. So,
yeah.
So you guys met. And Ginger, you went to law school, so totally different paths. Hunter, you went to you were in finance. How in the world did you meet back to start a vacation rental company?
Well, I told Hunter, I said, "Hey, I'm moving to Oxford, Mississippi. I got into Ole Miss Law School, and that's where I've decided I'm going to go." And he was like, "Well, you're not going without me." So we moved together, and he bought a house and worked for New York Life for a short stint. And I graduated law school, and after that we were like, "Hey, we're going to move back to Mobile," because I had done some law internships over summers in Mobile, and I went to high school down here, so I had like kind of connections in Mobile where I thought I would be able to secure a legal job pretty easily, which was the case. I clerked for a judge for a year, and then I worked in an insurance defense firm for several years. But into that tenure of the insurance defense firm, Hunter had been working as a financial advisor for a bank, and basically just kind of got tired of doing that. And there was an opportunity to purchase a very small book of business that was a vacation rental company down in Gulf Shores. We had some family friends that knew about this opportunity and told us about it. And we were like, "Okay, well, we'll do it. Hunter, like my income will cover us both." Again, I was working at a pretty big oil firm, so it'll be fine. And not even 6 months after we decided to do that, my law firm came to me and did not renew my contract. There was another attorney that was working at the firm who had had triplets, triplet children, and she had been off on maternity leave for a while, and they never really thought she would come back, and she did. Anyway, there wasn't enough room for both of us, enough work for both of us. So after that, we decided, like, Mobile really isn't working for this business. It's about an hour away from Gulf Shores, and it's just too much. If something comes up in the middle of the night, we're kind of scrambling. So we cashed out our corporate 401ks. We sold our house. We sold our boat. We were about to sell my car. We did not. And we took all that money, and we said, we're just going to go for it. We can't fail right now. And Hunter's parents were nice enough. They have a condo down here to allow us to stay there while we got our lives together, because truly it was a matter of getting our lives together. But, you know, it was kind of like that grassroots marketing, that guerrilla marketing. We didn't have a marketing budget. So I was like, what can we do for free every day? Well, we can post on Facebook. We can order 50 stickers with beach balls on them. And there's like a bunch of famous bars down here. The Floribama is one of them that encourage like stickering and writing on the walls. Like, we can go do this stuff, and we can go to every chamber event and meet everyone in our local area. So at least everyone locally knows who we are, right? And that's just kind of how it started. And we had a great partnership in the beginning with the war, which we did with trade. Like, it was a wine festival. I'll never forget it. They came to us and they were like, you know, can you be the People's Choice Award sponsor? I'm like, well, what does sponsorship entail? And they said like $2,500. And I was like, oh, we don't have $2,500, but what do we have? We have a condo, Hunter's parents, that we were living in, mind you, that we can give to one of the chefs that's going to be competing in this wine and food festival. And I can't even remember where we stayed that weekend, but we got all of our stuff out, and like literally that's how like determined we were. But we were the People's Choice Award sponsor that year, and it was a lot of like scrappy stuff in the beginning for sure.
That's really cool too. And I think, you know, your rise to fame has been different than a lot of companies, but you did it the right way. I think, you know, making a name for yourself locally is super important. Obviously your guests aren't from the local area, but just gaining that respect within the community is going to breed, you know, just good business as you expand out and start getting the guests to come to you also. Now, you guys have still stayed, I think, very active in the Chamber of Commerce and in other organizations. Tell us a little bit about your involvement in the community.
So that was the big thing, like Jennifer talked about the chamber. We just knew, I knew from living in other areas, living in Oxford, living in my hometown of Selma, that the chamber was important, and working those connections. Kind of, Alex, to lead in what you were saying, we didn't have a marketing budget. So we told everybody locally, we at least knew everybody locally knew somebody back home.
Exactly.
Right. Yeah. That they could talk about beach ball. And we felt like we were screaming into abyss. Yeah, for a couple of years there, like we kept posting up here. But as far as local involvement, I'm a board member of the chamber. You know, just from working, going to events, I helped develop the diplomat program down here. So a lot of people in a lot of chambers have ambassadors. Well, because we've always been a retirement community, the ambassadors were all retirees. The theory was these retirees don't have much else to do. We'll get them to ribbon cuttings. We'll get them to after hours, and it'll make the pictures look like all these people are there. Well, by the time Jen and I moved here, there's been this, if you want to call us a youth movement, maybe a 30s movement, if that's a youth movement. A lot of people in their 30s are moving here and want to start a family. So I came to the chamber president, was like, look, we need like a younger, like aggressive type group. Helped develop that out, which kind of bolstered me to show that, you know, like I had the type of leadership skills to serve on a board. Served on the board. My first year was actually 2020. So they ended up not counting that year. They punted it an extra year. And it looks like I might be on the executive team next year. I may end up serving on the chamber board 6 or 7 years total when it's supposed to be a 3-year stint. Ginger is the president of the Junior Women's Club. I'm in the Kiwanis Club. I'll let Ginger hit on this one. The biggest one is we were the chairs last year, and I keep my trophies around, but we were the chairs for the American Heart Association. Ginger, tell them what we did for American Heart.
We raised, so nationally, there's only been two balls that have ever raised over $300,000 for the American Heart Association. It was ours. And then the year before us down here, Nick and Eva Wilmont also raised, but I think the total ended up being $314,000.
Wow.
The American Heart Association.
That's incredible.
It was a one-night event. And we were fortunate enough to hold it at Coastal, which is a new restaurant that's opened on the beach down here. The same owners own the Floribama, and they've just opened this like huge, beautiful open air restaurant, bar, venue right on the beach in the main part of Orange Beach. And it was kind of like the kickoff for that event space as well as Art Revart. But it was a really fun night, and it was so fun, and just raising that much money and seeing everyone in our community come out. I mean, because pretty much everybody was there. It was a night to be remembered. I mean, it felt like a second wedding reception almost. Like,
I
can imagine.
I remember seeing the pictures from that night, and they were fantastic. So you guys do well. You look great, and you're helping people and bringing people on vacations. So got to feel pretty good at the end of the day.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. So tell us a little bit about growing the business there, because I think that's also the, you know, really unique part of your story, that you haven't been doing this all that long, but you have a lot of properties, mostly condos there. Tell us about how you started growing and gaining inventory.
So I played off of what Jennifer was talking about, the guerrilla marketing. We had no vacation rental experience, right? So how do you go into somebody's house and explain to them you're going to take care of their asset? So that was where I used the financial advisor, asset manager. I used my construction company knowledge, you know, the legal knowledge. I always used to say, well, to this day, I still say the ace of spades up my sleeve is Ginger being an in-house, you know, attorney. And we have in-house legal. And we always kind of like scattered out there. Like, if you have a legal issue with your property, you know, you can always call her first and she'll give you whatever advice or tell you, you know, to refer to. So we just kind of use that professionalism to get out in front of people. And I like this story. The first client we ever sold, they sent in a message. I think I tried to message them on Facebook. Did you hear anything back from them? Thought it was Lowell's calls. The owner, she ended up calling me. She asked us to come over to their property. We're sitting down. And y'all know those like big banana leaf fans that are kind of like a trendy thing in coastal towns. They're big, they're ugly, they're collect guns.
Yeah.
One of those banana leaf fans up on the seat. And the wife looks over at Ginger and says, Ginger, what do you think of that fan? And I'm sitting there like, oh, shoot, what do you say? I mean, this is a coin flip. Do you tell her you hate it? Do you love it? What do you think? So I just kind of like sat back like, all right, baby, this is all you. And Ginger goes, honestly, I hate it. It collects dust. It's ugly. It's tacky. Yeah, I get it out of here. The wife stops what she's doing. She points at her husband and goes, I told you that thing was terrible. We're getting rid of it.
Oh, no.
Signed up. They had three other property managers just go, oh, it's fine. Leave it. It'll be okay. And she needed somebody to vilify that fan. And Ginger did it. And they're still our clients this day.
No,
we hang out there. They come in for snowbird season every year. They're from Manitowoc, Wisconsin. We play spades with them. We have a big old time. But it was moments like that, just going in and sitting in people's living rooms and just selling them on us. Obviously, that salesmanship has changed now. It's a lot more inside sales on the phone. But that's what we get out there and do. And then other things we would do, we just tried to look at the general market and not be, well, what's everybody been doing for the past 20 years down here? Obviously, that's not working. They're not growing. They're hemorrhaging properties where it may be. So one thing Ginger saw, listing agents like at Remax and Keller Williams and wherever else would be, they would go do Facebook Lives and walk through their properties.
Mm-hmm.
No vacation home managers down here were doing that. So guess what we started doing? We started going live, and we'd take our little baby, Lowry, at the time, and we would have her on my hip while I was sitting there walking around talking, showing all people, just comment about the baby, or we'd bring our dogs out to the beach, and we played on anything, everything that was going to pull on people's heartstrings and made them want to see more. And we put ourselves out there. And that's the biggest thing is like, you see the commercials of the guy that's selling Ford, like, I'm buying Ford down here at my dealership. Well, yeah, whatever. Yeah. If you see that man in public, you're like, oh my God, he's famous. Well, all that man's doing is buying advertising.
Putting himself out there. Yeah, right. Yeah.
But we did the same thing. So like, we were in a restaurant one time and I heard a lady go, there's the beach ball baby.
Yeah.
Like, that was when I was like, That's the moment. So it was just being aggressive, putting ourselves out there. And again, just social. Again, y'all have seen us at Verma and everything. I mean, we put ourselves out there. Ginger peacocks with her outfits. I mean, that's our thing.
I would say you do too, Hunter. I wouldn't give that to Ginger. You guys both do.
Oh, I love it.
I think it's about like being authentic too. Cause like we had our baby with us because we didn't have her in daycare at the time. Like it wasn't like, of publicity stunt, it was like, well, we're going to try to save money. And if I can bring her to the office, I mean, up until they get to about 9 months, they're pretty good. But then they start grabbing stuff. But anyway, we were really living that, you know, like we were going to properties with an infant, like that was our lives. So it was just, you know, about like getting on and creating that content. And I tell people that are like just starting, I'm like, create some content. Any content is better than no content. And I think people get obsessed or scared to like get in front of a camera or post something. And I look back at some of the stuff I did, you know, 5 years ago, and I'm like, I had no idea what I was doing then. Like, this crap is awful. Like, I can't believe I posted that. But then at the time, it didn't really matter, right? Because somebody saw it.
So. Yeah, it's spot on. I just had this very similar conversation with somebody earlier that that's all it's about. I mean, it's not rocket science, but I mean, to become well known in an industry or, you know, as you're growing your personal brand, you guys have, I think, your own personal brands, but also a couple brand, which is kind of a different perspective. But it's putting yourself out there. It's pressing play. It's hitting record and just showing up and being authentic. And I think it makes complete sense why you guys have risen to the top the way that you have. So it's been fun to see.
I have a question for you guys. So I was in property management over in Panama City Beach. So very familiar with Gulf Shores, competitive set, you know, always paying attention. And when I joined Expedia, I took over after about a couple of months, I took over Gulf Shores. And what was really interesting at the time was I said, you need to put Gulf Shores into my market. And they were like, it's not like there's nothing really over there. And I was like, no, there's literally there's 16,000 rental units like in that market. And I remember the VP of market management at the time going, there's 6,000. I said, no, 16,000. He's like, wait a minute, say that again. And like everybody in the room, because we're on the speakerphone, yelled 16,000. And he was like, oh my gosh, like he had no idea. So I took over the market. And I go in there, and then my first time going in, I had not been there, but maybe one time where I happened to be Pensacola and just drove over and visited. So totally blown away. But there were just a couple of staple players in the market. There was the Wyndham Kaiser. There was the Brett Robinson. There was Young's. I mean, there was a couple of big players in the market. So you guys came in and kind of slowly creeped up on them. I think without them
not even slowly, I'd say. I mean,
well, I think in
took everybody by storm almost.
Yeah, well, I think definitely I would say for those people, it was quiet. They didn't know what was happening, at least from my perspective, just knowing the market. I don't think anybody like recognized that you guys were building and massing this kind of, you know, business. So one, awesome, because like that market is a tough market. But one thing that I love about Alabama is that they are so proud of that beach. I mean, that is their beach. They own it. It's not like in Florida where we have miles and miles of beach and you can choose to go anywhere. And like everybody like sticks their, you know, flag in the sand and this is our destination and don't come over here. I mean, Alabama is very proud of their beaches and they should be, but it also makes it competitive because it is such a small area. So I'm thinking like you guys got into this. You just said you didn't really have the budget. You didn't know really what you were doing. So you were just trying everything. Like, were you scared that you were going to fail against these big guys, or was it just like that you didn't even pay attention to who they were?
Like someone asked me that, or asked both of us that, I don't know, a year or so ago. And like, we looked at each other. It's like, we didn't even think about it.
Didn't even think about it.
Like,
yeah.
We cannot fail. Like Hunter's family is from Selma, Alabama. And his dad owns a very successful industrial construction company up there. So like the alternative was like, this works and we get to live at the beach and raise our family down here. Or we got to tuck tail and move back to Selma. Like, and
yeah,
I was like, we just got to make it work. Like, I don't know. It just didn't even, we were just wanting to be different. And, you know, some of those grandfather names that you mentioned, you know, we came up with a completely different concept. Beachfront properties. It's not Harrelson properties or.
It's on a name. Yeah. It's on a family legacy.
Right. That symbolized, like, for me, when I closed my eyes and think about a beach ball, when we were thinking about the name, we had like a vision board and we had all these, sticky notes up there because we actually rebranded the company that we bought to Beachwall Properties. But I was like, I just think of kids on the beach playing with a beach ball. It's like, what are you trying to sell? You're trying to sell family vacations, right? Yes. So it was unique, but it also conveyed our messaging. I don't know. We just wanted to be different. We wanted to have no one down here had a slogan like, come have a ball at the beach.
Right.
No one was like, doing the whole brand thing. And it seemed, looking back, we should have been scared because we didn't know what we didn't know, but we weren't at the time.
But and part of that fear is what keeps people out. But I literally yesterday was meeting with a company and they joked that they said property management companies down here are like weeds. They pop up, they annoy you a little bit. Yeah. And then those die and disappear. And then every now and then one grows into a tree. And he said, "My friend, you're a tree." He said, we saw you. You were a little bit of a bush and I was like, you were a tree. And that's why we're having this meeting today. But I'll give you an example. There's one brand that's no longer in business anymore. They sold out to the team.
Yeah.
But they literally 1 year when Vrbo pushed Instabook in 2017, late 2016, early 2017, we immediately jumped on it and adopted it. Part of it was because I was like, we don't have enough resource to vet all these emails coming in. We got to roll the dice on what we got, right? Well, this legacy brand was so upset by the Instabook and by what we were doing, they decided to pull all of their inventory off of VRBO because their book direct strategy was so strong that they were down that year 25% in rentals.
Wow.
They didn't realize that even though I think they said in their board meetings only 16% of rentals were from Vrbo, they didn't realize how many people were going to Vrbo or going to Airbnb. Yeah. Actually, that was really before Airbnb. And finding out the name of the property and then
The billboard of it.
And again, they're not in business anymore, but they literally, they were campaigning. They were sending out flyers to prospective owners that we are not on VRBO.
I remember the flyer. It said, "Say no to VRBO."
They're probably sad trying to say that to the owners, don't do it.
And I just remember seeing that flyer and being like, I mean, I'm not an expert in the subject matter yet. I mean, now I am, but back then I was like, I'm not an expert, but this seems really again, everything that seems in my intuition, because for me as a consumer, I guess a millennial, which is what I am, I want to be able to go on a website and not have to call someone, be able to just do it instantly. Like, I don't want to email back and forth about pricing and all these questions. I want it convenient. So I think that's another thing that made us different. It's putting ourselves in the consumer's position and seeing what would I want if I was booking a vacation, or what would I want if I was in the position of a homeowner?
Mm-hmm. We did it. We made another huge mistake, ladies. This is well documented. It's out there in the stratosphere, but our commission rate down here is 18%. The traditional rate when we first moved down here was 20 to 22.
Mm-hmm.
So our thought was, we'll come in at 18. People will take it. They'll take a chance on us. Well, guess what? We've reset the market. Now everybody, if they're going up against us, they try to put under 18%.
Yeah.
One of those big names that you mentioned earlier, Annie, actually last November moved every single owner in their portfolio to 18%.
I'm familiar with that move. Yeah.
And we got thinking about it. We're like, you just cut 15% of your overhead profitability. You're going to start cutting people. And there's a lot of scuttlebutt about that.
But you guys started it. It's the race to the bottom. We definitely see that in our market here. I mean, we've got some of the big players that they'll come in and they'll say they just do 0% commission for the first year. And it really hurts the market when people continuously are jabbing down. But I mean, 18% is still pretty good. But I've seen some markets where it's like the going rate is 10%, 8 to 10%, because it's just been cut down so much.
Well, and that gets to, and some of that's marketing too. Like, we've got a couple competitors in town that they run that 10%. Well, all they're doing for 10% is using their PMS and running marketing.
Right.
If they get a leaky faucet, they're calling a sub. The sub's going out there and they're billing the owner directly. The cleaning being billed directly. Everything's being billed directly. Every time that unit, somebody darkens the door, they're being charged for it. So in the long run, they're really not coming out that much better. They just think they're saving money because of that. Or it goes back to and this is a tangent from what we're talking about, but love thy neighbor. Every owner's neighbor is booked 20% more and has made much more money than what they made.
Always. Yeah.
And I'm always like, well, what was your neighbor charging? Well, I don't know. Well, what dates were they booked specifically? Well, I don't know. Yeah. How long does your neighbor own that property? I've had some neighbors down in areas that have owned the property for 20 years. and they're still charging rates from 10, 15 years ago. So, they're booked like 100%, but they're not getting any money out of it, you know?
Yeah, it's amazing the tall tale that will be told between owners. I always marveled at that when we would in Panama City Beach with the same issues. You go to like your homeowners meetings every year, and we had like I think 11 condos at one point that we managed. So it was like every weekend was a different homeowners meeting in the fall, and there was always one person there. Well, Bob's been 100% occupied. Well, like Bob's unit was off the market because he was renovating it, so Bob didn't have 100% occupancy, yet it blocked 100% of the time. But they just take these things and it becomes this like unicorn of business that doesn't exist. And I think that's just in any market. But I think you guys have done exactly what people need to do. Is like, if you don't know, just get out there and just try until you can invent yourself and find yourself. And being in a market like Gulf Shores, I think, you were up against a lot of legacy folks. They had been there for a long time. I mean, let's face it, one of the biggest ones owns half the property in the southeast, in the southern part of the state. So it was probably very overwhelming. But I think when you don't know what you don't know, everything seems like a win, or, at least it seems like a learning tool. And so you've done a great job. And I heard about you guys the first time actually from Travis from the 100 collection.
He's like,
well, you're down in the panhandle. You've probably heard of them. Don't you know them? And I was like, I don't. Like, I feel like I need to. And he just kept talking and talking and talking about you guys. I feel like for 6 months before Burma. And he said, oh, one of the people that I know has won this award, but I can't tell you who it is. And when he said it, he'd been talking so much about you guys, I feel like he was hinting that it was you. So when I saw you won, I was like, oh, I've got to go meet these people.
Yeah,
so,
Travis and Rebecca, they were like you guys' publicists.
Biggest fan.
Yeah, I got the same thing. That Rebecca's like, you got to meet Otter and Ginger. Like, they're great. I'm like, okay, where are they? She's like, I don't know. Like, I'll find them.
So, yeah, that's an interesting story, too. Prior to this past year, prior to the award, we were under the radar. We were down here in Orange Beach, Gulf Shores, doing our thing. Because again, with the legacy market, I mean, we're at 270-ish properties and growing. But like when Brett Robinson has 1,600 and Vicasa's got 2,000, you still feel small. Like you just feel like you're just a wheel in this cog down here. So we had never really seen, the big market. We'd gone to Streamline Summit. We did go to Streamline Summit. And again, that's not as big as, what Vermont
right.
would be. Well, at Streamline Summit, it was actually Rebecca that came over to us and said, do you know Travis? Now, that question now, a year later, is laughable because I should have been like, yeah, everybody knows Travis. But instead, I was like, nah, who's Travis? Because again, we were under a rock. We were in our own little world.
I didn't know him either until last year. So.
And she's like, you really need to meet this guy. So we get on the call, and in Travis fashion, he's sitting there and he's asking us questions and he's looking around, and Travis can be animated and whatnot. And I'm looking at Ginger going like, what is this? What are we talking to this guy?
I think everybody has that
brought me in
the
here to? And finally, he's like, yeah, Rebecca, you're right. Y'all are in. And we're like, we're in what?
What are we in?
Like, did we win a prize? Like, what is this?
Are we in a club? Like,
right, exactly.
You won the
major award.
So he explains everything about the 100 collection. So I told Jennifer, like, yeah, I like this concept. Let's get involved. And then it was like a couple of months or so after that, we found out we were going to win the award. So we called him to tell him about it. And you got to think what a confirmation for him that's got to be. Like, you're interviewing somebody blindly in another state.
Yeah.
They're selling you. They're good interviewers. I'd say we're good at that. And then, lo and behold, they're going to win this. And this is something I can stamp on the first year of the collection. I mean, it all kind of played in. And I'll never forget. I'm going to be indebted to that man, or we're indebted to that man for forever. When we met at Vegas for the first time at Caesars, he took put his arms around Ginger and I. And like y'all said, he was our publicist. That entire weekend, he was like, if you met these two, they're rock stars. And he didn't have to do any of that. Like, that was just this Travis. That's who he is.
Yeah.
I mean, and we'd talk about the 100 collection later, but that whole deal is just a cool vibe. And from that, we won the award, and then everybody kind of got to know us. And now it's like, what would you say, Ginger? Once a week, somebody's calling you, asking for advice, or what software do you or what are you doing here and there? And it's fulfilling.
Yeah.
Travis definitely never met a stranger. I think that's the great thing about him is if you don't know somebody, he certainly knows somebody to get you to that somebody. So it's good to have him in your arsenal of friends. So you guys win this award. What did that do to change the trajectory of you in the business? And it sounds like, again, you know, Hunter, to your point, like you were under a rock, but obviously you weren't. But you're now out. Everybody knows who you are. You can't hide anymore. You've taken that role pretty serious. It seems like you've gotten pretty active and you're a vocal, part of the industry. And one of the things that Alex and I have talked to a lot of people about is that, you know, having new blood and having new people on panels and participate in some of these events is so important to kind of keep the business moving forward and iterate on, you know, things that worked 20 years ago. Some of them work, some of them don't, some of them just need to be updated. And so having you guys involved and having you as new faces, new voices is really exciting. But what do you think that award did for you to get you out there and get you more active and visible?
I mean, I think the award itself, the publicity that we did for the award and winning it has done, I can't even put into words what it's done for our business. And like the mayor of our city called us while we were in the airport. We were with CJ Stamm and his wife. I'll never forget it. We were in the Delta or one of the American Express lounges waiting for our flight to go back to Pensacola to get back over to Orange Beach. And the mayor called and he was like, I heard that y'all won a national/international award. Congratulations. We want to do an award presentation for y'all. And I'm thinking, okay, whatever. We're going to go to a city council meeting. I had previously worked for the city of Orange Beach as an assistant city attorney for the first year or two while we were getting started part time. So I knew the mayor, but I was thinking, you know, this award ceremony wouldn't really be that big of a deal. Well, he actually presented an award on behalf of the city at a town hall meeting in the new Performing Arts Center. And they're like, wow. It was an auditorium packed full of people. It's this big, huge plaque. And it was a really cool moment. The award ceremony was broadcast live on all the city official channels on Facebook and all of that. So a lot of people saw that, but you know, I think, you know, part of it was us saying, okay, we've won this great thing. Like, how are we going to publicize it? Right. Because they didn't actually have a badge for the award. And like, we reached out to everyone and we're like, hey, can we create a badge so we can put like on our emails, on our website? Yeah. Is that okay? And like, they said, well, yeah, can you create something and send it to us for approval? I said, yes, we'll do that. So myself and my director of marketing, we worked on a badge and they approved it. And so now back on, you know, every single email we send out, every single homeowner acquisition mail piece through Venturi, it's on there.
Yeah.
It's a trust icon now. So yeah, mm-hmm. we were happy to receive the award and obviously it was a great honor and we were very humbled. But yeah, I think us pushing that too has really helped. And speaking of like it being the same faces, it's funny because I think Alex and I were talking about this. The first panel that I was asked to speak on was at Verma and Brooke with Venturi asked. And I'm like looking down the row and I'm seeing all these guys that look a whole lot like Hunter with their beards on. And Brooke up there and there's the guys with the beards and then there's me. And
well, I'm like, CJ, Ryan Dame, Travis.
Matt Durrett. Yeah.
Yeah, Matt Durrett. I mean, yeah, it was just this all guys panel and then this smoking blonde in a pink romper.
Not pink. I was gonna say she was definitely pink.
Love it. Yeah, I think that's important too. You know, like I came from the legal world, insurance defense. I was a litigator. I was in court all the time, and like same thing there. Like it would be a whole courtroom full of men. The judge was a man. The attorneys were men, and I can't tell you how many like depositions I sat in. Or I actually got in an elevator one time, and I was meeting a client for the first time, and they said, "Ever use a paralegal?" I was like, "No, I'm your attorney." But you know, and I had to mention that since this is the Real Women of Vacation Rentals. But
for sure.
Now we women to be involved, and I think that Hunter gets a little miffed sometimes when Brooke and these same people keep asking me to be on a panel, and he doesn't necessarily get asked all the time. But I'm like, they need faces. They want somebody that looks different, and he definitely knows like the numbers and the revenue management way better than I do. I'm kind of legal, marketing, PR, HR. That's kind of my wheelhouse. I don't deal with like rates and all the hard math. I'm girl math. I don't do any of that. But you have like, I would say a harder role in our company, but it is important that everyone get their time.
Yeah. Well, I think you guys balance each other out and complement each other very well. So yeah, I think it works well. And Connor, you know this, you've learned this over the many years of marriage now, and your job is to let her shine, right? So definitely doing that.
happy wife, happy life.
Yeah.
I support her. She's a little miffed. We're going to talk about miff. She's miffed because I'm on 2 panels at Burma this year.
Oh,
and she's only
here we
on
go.
One.
Yeah. Well, I'm not on any ginger, so we can hang out together. Okay.
So let's talk a little bit about what's going on in the business right now. And what are the biggest challenges that you guys have that you're currently facing?
Well, for us personally, it's getting this Durham laundry facility across the finish line. We're about 90% complete with the facility. I went by there yesterday. We've got most of the sheetrocks up. Painting will happen this weekend. Equipment is supposed to be delivered in a couple of weeks. So it's just been the job that wouldn't end. We started this journey in May of 22, thinking we were going to buy another company, and we decided to just build it from the ground up. And construction, delays, financing, you name it, everything that could delay happened. But we were able to finally get all of housekeeping moved in-house. So right now we're running out of a couple of storage units and survive that. But once we can get in that building, it'll be great. As far as, it's the same old things we run into every year. You know, earlier on, we were talking about this, you've got key made flyers from competitors going out there. And, you're almost having to re-recruit your own owners and explain to them what you're doing to keep them in-house, and then also juggling the new people that are coming in. That's my challenge that I'm seeing. I'm sure Ginger's got a whole different look to that.
Yeah. So I'll say, when we first started, people were always rooting for the little guy, the underdog. They're like, I want to go with Beach Ball because they're boutique. We actually used to call ourselves and label ourselves boutique everywhere. Then when you get to 270 properties, you can't look yourself in the mirror and say, I'm a boutique business anymore, right? You're just not. You can have boutique service, and we're a local service, and we hire locally and all of that. But I can't market ourselves as boutique anymore. And I feel like that's come with its own set of challenges, right? Because now it's you're one of the big guys. Oh, well, I mean, I guess I kind of am, but I don't have 1,300 units
Yeah.
X does. I'm somewhere in between not being a 50 property manager and a 1,000 mega property manager, and finding that's the way to continue to market that, where people are still rooting for you and still think, oh, this is the local brand and you're not just some big guys that don't care about you anymore, has been a little bit challenging for us.
Well, as long as you stay authentic, though, you guys are both very charming in your own, your personalities are very different, but they're complementary. And you said it, Ginger, in the beginning, just being authentic is what got you here. You keep that. That's what builds the business that stays the longest. People are going to gravitate to that. And I don't think whether you have 500 or 2,000, as long as you guys stay authentic and true to yourselves, people are going to gravitate to you and want to work with you.
Agree.
Thank you, Annie. To kind of piggyback on what Ginger was saying, I'm a board member of the chamber. We're a chamber champion. We're a top 1%er. Yeah. Every event you come in, there's a beach ball sign somewhere at the event. But we've noticed one of our, if you call them a competitor, but a small peer type company has been getting a lot of love from the chamber lately. And they've been kind of following the beach ball playbook. And we're almost a little kind of myth that they've been getting all this extra love. And I kind of said something to the president. I said, showing them a little extra. He said, Hunter, do you really need any more help? And that literally was his thought process. Yeah, you're here. You've climbed the mountain. You're looking around. You really need help. They need help more than you do. And I looked at it. I was like, I get it. I said, but McDonald's still runs ads every day because you got to remind everybody. And what happens if there's a company that you bought a product from or something that you've used, and then you don't see an ad for them or don't hear about them for a year or two?
Oh, yeah, you forget about them.
Are they still in business? You still want to stay relevant. You still want to stay out front. You still want to be thought of as the go-to person. Even though I guess you got to share some love as a chamber person, but just understand why we still feel this way. Well, we're always going to press. We're always going to put ourselves out there.
Right.
I think that's something that people overlook. It's not just about achieving 200 plus properties, right? It's about you get there and you have to maintain your level of success, and you have to be able to care for those properties, work in those properties, you know, do all the things that you did when you were a 20 property, a 50 property, a 100 property management company. And that, like, that desire and like the amount of work that it requires just day after day after day. I mean, don't get me wrong, we're fortunate, we're blessed, we have a great team, but like, it's, you can't just say, oh, I'm done with it. Like, it's a consistency thing. You have to show up every day, and you, whether that be on your phone or answering emails or whatever to do, you just have to be on. And y'all know that.
And I think, I'm sure as you guys were building the business initially, there's the urge to just take any condo or any property that comes your way, because you've got to have that proof of concept to get the ones that you really want. But then as you start to get to a certain point, it's like, okay, now you're, it's a good position to be in, that now you can be more picky about which properties you bring onto your program. And then on the other side, you can start determining, are there some that we just don't want to have on the program anymore because they don't fit into our mix? Is that, do you guys, are you in that boat at all now? We're, like, kind of reevaluating, or did you reevaluate?
Ginger, are we in that boat, sweetheart?
We are. So this is the first year that we've like sat down and like done the whole, here's the spreadsheet and here are the properties we do not feel are performing to the number that we've set is our minimum, right? And so we actually let go of 8 clients the other day, and like all of them were like, what did we do wrong? You know? And it's hard to explain to someone who's trusted you and has given opportunity to your business. It's not, you know, it's not necessarily anything you did wrong. It's just that your property is not performing to the level that we need it to perform to make sense for our business of the size it is now. Right.
Right.
But I get on these, like, asked to speak on these panels, and, you know, this question always comes up, like, what's, you know, what properties are you going after? And I always tell whoever's listening, I'm like, we took anything and everything. Like, there were across the street condos that had carpet that were, you know, not any budget friendly places that now we would not have in our portfolio. But like, you have to do that. And don't be ashamed to do that when you're first starting out. Right. But yeah,
absolutely. Yeah.
We're at that point now. And it's been it's hard to say no to business. Right. Like, I remember telling Hunter the first or second year of business, I was like, I can't imagine ever turning down a property. Like,
we'll figure out something for it. Yeah.
We had a good lessons, though.
Our friend teaches you. And I'll mention his name. Brian Harris, he's a great guy. And he's a great operator, but he was sending us business. And I looked at Hunter, I was like, I just can't believe anybody would just like fire a client. And here we are, like, years
until
later,
you have to fire a client.
Yeah.
I get it now, Brian. Well, if you listen to that.
Well, and what got super off, I guess it's awesome to maybe take some of the sting out of us dropping those 8 properties. The next day, we had a prospect come in through Venturi, 6-bedroom, 7-bath house that alone will do more than those 8 properties combined.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's great.
You know, it's the leveling up. And that's another thing that, you know, Ginger and I, we debate back and forth, is the number of properties, right?
Mm-hmm.
From example, And he probably, and I won't use that number, but you got CJ over in Blue Ridge. CJ's at like 180 to 190 properties. We're at 270. We do about the same amount of revenue.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Yeah. So to me, it's about revenue, but like, we like to say 270 or 500 or 1,000, but like, they need to be 1,000 producers, not 1,000, you know, non-producers.
Well, I mean, you're in a market similar to where Annie is, similar to where I am, that it is a volume game. I mean, we don't have, you know, these markets, condo markets are not filled with properties that are just huge, huge high end. So to make a good business, you've got to have a lot of the, you know, the condos that rent, and that's in that kind of like mid to upper level tier. But sometimes that includes budget, and budget can be nice. I mean, you can have really nice budget-friendly condos that are well taken care of, that they aren't huge income producers, but they're providing a great vacation to somebody. And if you're taking care of it, then there's a lot of pride in that.
I told my owner relations manager, there's a property for everybody.
Exactly. Absolutely.
And she's like, are you sure about this? I was like, there's a property for everybody.
You know? Yeah.
But I've been approached on multiple occasions by other investor type people around town, and yeah, y'all may get a kick out of this. People are like, well, why don't you create like a sub company of Beach Vault, like a secondary company? So anything you wouldn't take, anything that doesn't qualify for Beach Vault, send it to that sub company. And what I tell them, I'm like, that sounds fine and good, but the issue is still the same. It's the operations that it takes. It's the maintenance. Yeah. It's the housekeeping. It's the marketing. It's the late night reviews. And those properties that we don't want are going to tend to have more maintenance issues. They're going to have more calls, which means you've got to have that support system for it that I have built out over here. So it's kind of like I can't double dip on it. I get so many head scratchers on that. I've heard of certain individuals, Alex, that went from taking all the scraps to being one of the largest property managers in the country. So, you know, sometimes that can happen as well. So.
Right. Yeah, that's very true. Very true. Well, guys, it's been a total pleasure having you on the show. I know we've wanted to have you on for quite a while now and excited to see you at VRMA in just a couple weeks here. But if anybody wants to get in touch and learn more about you guys, your services, or just, you know, hear more about your success story, because I'm sure it's very inspiring to many of our listeners, what's the best way for them to reach out?
So our email addresses are very easy. It's Hunter or Ginger at beachballproperties.com. We tell everybody, check out our website, beachballproperties.com. Our social media is like none other, our TikTok, our Twitter, now Ginger's on Twitter. Or X, I should say.
X,
Facebook, Instagram, check all those out. We actually went viral on TikTok one time, so that was pretty cool.
Nice.
But yeah, check out our socials. Our socials are the best way. And then check out what's happening Orange Beach and what's happening Gulf Shores. Any one of those things you find, you're going to find what Hunter and Ginger are doing.
That's awesome. Right. That's awesome. Well, if anybody wants to get in touch with Annie and I, you can go to alexandanniepodcast.com. And until next time, thanks for tuning in, everybody.